Stay tuned. Nature News is coming up next, right here on WTZQ.
Join us now for an informative look at the world of nature with local naturalist and educators Carlton Burke and Dan Lazar, reporting on all the natural events occurring right here in wild western North Carolina. From bugs to bears and everything in between, get ready to explore the rich natural heritage of our southern Appalachian Mountains.
Good morning out there, and welcome to another broadcast of Nature News. If you don't know what Nature News is, you just happen to tune in, let's tell you what Nature News is. It's a program that keeps you in touch with things in the wild, in the world of nature, particularly the western North Carolina area and the surrounding southern Appalachian Mountain region. That is our focal area. We've been on the air for well over 30 years plus now. In fact, the month of March is our anniversary. We started Nature News way back in 1993, the previous millennium.
That's right.
And we've been here a while. And I say we. Me is Carlton Burke. I'm one of your host educators.
And I'm Dan Lazar. Sorry, I was too far away from the mic.
Yeah. So he didn't stutter. He said his name twice, but one should have been louder than the other.
Right. I think everyone can hear
But that. We are your original co-host here of Nature News all these years. So
yeah, that's probably a record.
Probably
to have
is.
The same co-host for that long.
Yeah, probably is.
Without getting on each other's nerves too much.
Well.
We'll talk about that later.
We'll talk about it another time. But in any case, no, we love reporting on the world of nature. We love hearing from you. A little bit later, we're going to tell everybody how you can get in touch with us. We're going to give our contact information, because we encourage our listeners not to just listen, but to tell us something so we can listen to them tell us something that they have seen. Something you've seen out there, so maybe have a question about something in the world of nature, good observation, topic for discussion, comments. We love to hear from our listeners, so we'll tell you how to get in touch. This is our broadcast for the final weekend of March, March 28th. And just a little heads up, today we got some news on some butterflies, some caterpillars, got some news on a lot of wildflowers are starting to come up. We're going to have a roadkill report today, unfortunately, an eye to the sky report. And I know that probably we'll also have a What's in My Pocket report.
Looking forward to that.
Dan, do you have anything in your pocket other than like car keys? Or?
No, I'm counting on you.
Okay, I do have something in my pocket.
Right.
Car keys, a Swiss Army knife,
anything
or something else
natural.
As well, something okay. That's nature-related. That's right. What our What's in Our Pocket, or What's in Your Pockets, or What's in My Pocket series, whatever you want to call it. Okay. You know, when I was saying that, it just brought me back to the mind. You remember, we mentioned before, the pocket fisherman.
Oh, yeah.
You once had a good story about the pocket fisherman. Wasn't the pocket fisherman advertised back in the, was it 70s?
It would have been, yes, the 70s.
Yeah, and it's supposed to be this cool little fishing thing that you could put in your pocket, go fishing anywhere.
It was 1995.
Yeah, and, that's how much it cost.
That's how much it cost.
Not the year 1995.
It was a little, it was made of plastic, of course.
Yeah.
And it folded up into this compact little shape. And the actual fishing rod part of it was like 8 inches long.
Really?
Yeah.
And you had one.
I had one.
I never had one. Yeah. I use a real fishing rod.
Yeah.
That you had to put over your shoulder, not in your pocket.
Well.
But
this was a kind of a travel fishing rod.
So, so it wasn't for like everyday fishing, like for emergency survival fishing just on. I think I'd go fishing today, but.
I don't have my rod.
Yeah.
But luckily,
I have the pocket fisherman. Yeah. Yeah.
If I still had it, I'd put it in my pocket. That would be a good item.
I'd be willing to bet you could go on YouTube and find an old commercial for that. I might have to try to see that, because I love those old commercials.
Yeah.
All right, getting off the subject as we often do.
Okay.
Let's get back on the world of nature, the subject. I mean, that was nature-related, fishing and stuff like that. That reminds me, I got this urge to go fishing. I haven't done it yet, but in early springtime,
right.
March, early April, this is the time you go fishing for bass, largemouth bass.
Uh-huh.
They're starting to move into shallow water. It's almost, the water is heating up. It's almost their breeding season time for them to start getting active and brings back a lot of memories from when I was a kid catching bass at this time of year. And it was really neat, because you walk around some of these lakes and ponds where I used to fish, and in early April, late March, everything would be in bloom around the lakes,
right.
You know, all the you sometimes walk around people's backyards where they were all one of these lakes where people have a backyard. It goes down to a community lake or something. Everybody's azaleas were in bloom and stuff. It was nice and warm. It's just the grass was getting nice and green. It was just a pleasant time to be out.
A lot of people have bass lakes in neighborhoods. You know, they're made for bass fishing, but they are like houses are all around them and they're landscaped. And then you get some wildlife coming in. You get herons and so forth showing up in those lakes. Right. And then, of course, dragonflies. Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So I can see that.
Yeah. So in any case, it just made me think of all that stuff I want to do. But meanwhile, let's report on some other things that are happening out there.
Okay.
And Dan, should we start off with, let's start off with something that everybody loves. Let's talk butterflies to begin with.
Yes.
Butterflies. No, I've never met anybody that doesn't like butterflies. Some people don't like caterpillars. They are going to turn into butterflies.
I met someone who was afraid of butterflies.
I know some people are afraid of birds, but afraid of butterflies?
Yes.
How could that even be?
This was a person who was from Anguanguera in Mexico,
yeah,
which is right near the Monarch Butterfly Sanctuary.
Oh, were they afraid of them because of the cultural significance of, they think they're like the resurrected dead relatives? No.
No, she was afraid of them because...
The monarchs?
I have two people I know that were afraid of them.
Really?
And she was a little girl back then, and she had to go up over the ridge to tend to sheep or goats, or I forget what she was doing, but she had to go through the sanctuary to get there.
Through all the monarchs that hanging from the branches down there in the overwintering spots?
Yeah, but also there were dead ones on the ground.
Yeah.
And she said they were up to her knees.
Can you imagine that?
Yeah. And anyway,
I can't imagine that. Is that like, you know, think all like the leaves that fall here, the deepest you've ever seen the leaves, you know, they have monarchs that fall down dead underneath trees that can be as deep as leaves.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. So anyway, she was afraid of them. She thought that they might, well, you know, yeah, they have warning coloration.
Mm-hmm.
And some animals that can sting have warning coloration. So maybe the color of it. But for whatever reason, she was afraid to go and do her chore because she was afraid of the monarch butterflies.
Really?
And the other thing is, this is from Cleveland, Ohio, back in the 1850s, before you were born, Carl.
And before you were born.
Oh, yeah. But I read about this.
Not much before you were born.
At one time, when I was in college and supposed to be doing other things, I read all the Cleveland newspapers from like 1830 to 1900. But anyway, they had a speaker come through there sometime in the 1850s talking about the germ theory of disease. And this was right before the monarch butterflies migrated through across Lake Erie. And there were a number of people then, for some reason, thought that monarch butterflies were germs.
Really?
Moving in, carrying disease. And so on the following day, they had a number of calls to the authorities worried about the monarch butterflies. That's two people that were afraid of monarchs.
I've never heard of that such a thing.
But other than that, everyone likes butterflies.
Yeah, yeah. So there's always some wackos out there.
That's right.
But generally speaking, people like butterflies. So what kind of butterflies can they like around here that butterflies are actually active right now?
Tiger swallowtails would be number one on my list. Because they're
beautiful.
And they're perfect now because they've all just emerged and they're not tattered. The colors are bright. One of the most beautiful butterflies in the world is out in our area right now. So we have some of the other ones that are out. We have some spring azures, little tiny blue butterflies are out. We've got a few morning cloak butterflies. We haven't had a lot of those, but they overwinter as adults. So that's one that you can see any time of year, and we have had a few of them out right now. We've had either question marks or commas. They're both kind of orange. They're called angle wings. The wings kind of are scalloped at the edges. And the way you tell them apart is these little dots on the underside of their wings. Sometimes they're shaped like a comma with a small dot and then a curved dot above it. Sometimes they look like a question mark where the upper dot is curved around like the upper part of a question mark. So we have commas or question marks. I'm not sure which one. But
you got to be really close to tell the difference on those guys.
Yeah, yeah. We have a few cabbage whites, which are out all the time. And cabbage whites are kind of mid-sized white butterflies with two grayish dots on their wings. We have some dusky wings, like Juvenile's dusky wing, Sleepy dusky wing. These are little, small, kind of grayish butterflies.
When you say Juvenile's, you're not talking about young butterflies.
No, no.
That's the actual name.
Yeah.
Juvenile, like, it's not spelled slightly different.
Right. It's named after a person
named
Juvenile.
Yeah.
But they're out. West Virginia white is out. Yeah, the orange sulfur is out. I think that's all that I've seen, but I'm sure there are some more. You got any more on
your list? Yeah, well, you've seen more than I have, but I have got a couple of notations I want to mention about tiger swallowtails, because they're just one of my very favorites because they do come out. You know, once they come out, hey, spring is here.
Right.
Even though we might have a freeze or two left, spring is here, and I love to see them. So I was watching some tiger swallowtails right here at Nature News, in the yard here at Nature News,
right,
where there's some ground ivy in the lawn. And they were out. I don't think I've ever noticed this before, but they were out nectaring. It was two or three of them nectaring right on the ground, finding different little blooms on ground ivy that was in bloom.
Yeah.
And they seemed to be really enjoying that. And then a couple days later, I noticed a couple of spice bush swallowtail butterflies out. And, of course, you know, the swallowtail clan, there's a yellow tiger swallowtail we see a lot. There's a spice bush swallowtail we'll come back and mention in just a moment.
Right.
There's also the pipe vine swallowtail.
Right.
And depending where you're at, you know, there's different swallowtail butterflies in different geographical regions.
Right.
Some regions have
black swallowtail.
Right. So we have also black swallowtail here. So depending on where you're at, you may have different ones that come out at different times of year.
And the black phase of the tiger swallowtail.
Yeah, and the tiger swallowtail, that's a very common one that's yellow with black wing fangs that we see right now. The female of that is usually very dark in color, almost all kind of a blackish blue color, head to toe, pretty much, with some little red spots on. I haven't seen any female tiger swallowtails yet. Usually the males come out a little bit earlier. But I did see a male spice bush swallowtail and a female spice bush swallowtail.
Okay.
And you can tell them apart because they have, mostly have kind of blackish wings.
Right.
A little bit smaller usually than a tiger swallowtail. And also on the hind wing, they have a powder blue color if it's a
kind of iridescent.
Yeah. If it's a female. And then you see the same butterfly, but instead of kind of a powdery blue iridescence on the back two hind wings, they have kind of a greenish color, greenish blue, and that would be the male.
And all these butterflies we've been talking about, they're all dark colored, and they are all mimics of the pipevine swallowtail, which is a toxic butterfly. It's a butterfly which a lot of birds and other animals avoid because it is distasteful and can cause upset stomachs, can cause vomiting. And so,
what do you mean? That's if you eat them?
If you eat them.
Eat them.
Yeah.
Who would eat a butterfly?
A bird.
That's true. Birds will eat butterflies. So, they're bad.
No,
birds eating butterflies.
They're not bad. They're just doing what they do.
But you know what? They eat the body and they spit the wings out.
Yeah.
And sometimes you find a little wing or two here and there.
You know, praying mantises do that too.
Yep.
And I was sitting under a tree one time and I saw these individual wings come floating down.
Oh, really?
While I was sitting. And I looked up.
Both of them?
Huh?
Both of them?
Both
wings?
I saw two or three wings, yeah.
Oh.
And I looked up and there was a praying mantis just above my head, munching on a butterfly and just discarding the wings.
Yeah.
But anyway, getting back to this mimicry, we have several species which are very similar to the pipevine swallowtail. And the pipevine swallowtail is avoided by a lot of birds. And so some of these, like the dark phase of the tiger swallowtail, they gain some protection because they resemble a toxic species. And so we have a group of butterflies that all are resembling one that tastes bad. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, so there's definitely an interesting group of butterflies, and they're so pretty and they're very big. And luckily we have several generations of them here because each individual generation, when they go from the caterpillar stage to an adult, the adult's going to live, 2 weeks maybe?
Uh-huh.
Maybe 3 weeks if they're lucky or something like that before they die of old age. After laying eggs, that will hatch into another generation that matures after a few weeks. So you'll see a lot of tiger swallowtail butterflies in the area, and then they all seem to disappear.
Yeah.
And then a few weeks later, you'll hear some more. And meanwhile, the other species of swallowtails kind of fill in the gaps here.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky, sometimes you have overlapping generations of all these. You may see several different species all at once.
Yeah, but I like the spring when the tiger swallowtails come out, especially right around now, because they're one of the first conspicuous insects, and they're perfect. They're not tattered yet.
Oh yeah.
The colors are bright. They're big. It's just a beautiful butterfly. So this is a good time of year for going and looking at the tiger swallowtails.
So what would spring be without butterflies? I mean, they make me so happy when I see them flying around on those first flowers that are emerging. And of course, you know, some people call butterflies flying flowers.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But you know, the sad thing is, there's not as many butterflies as there used to be. Can you remember the olden days? The olden days, Dan.
I remember
back
the olden
when,
days.
Like, there were so many more butterflies. So many more insects of everything. I mean, just so much more of everything. You know, whether it's a spider, an insect, a bug, a bee, a snake, a turtle, a lizard. You know, there are certain things that are still very, very common. There's other things that are definitely in decline.
Yeah, if people, you know, young people today don't know what it was like here back in, say, the 1970s, including birdsong. You know, I've been starting to hear nice birdsong in the morning. But compared to, say, I don't know, 1975, it would be a chorus all around you. So many birds, you couldn't pick out the individuals.
So you hear a lot of birds in 1975.
Yeah.
And now it's 2026.
50 years ago.
And you're also 50 years older.
Yeah.
Could it be that your ears and hearing is starting to fade as you're getting older, and that's what it is? There's not really a decline?
What?
What'd you say? And there's really not a decline in songbirds? It's just your hearing?
No, I don't think so, because I'm still hearing the individuals.
It is documented that there's not as many birds to hear.
Right.
And so...
Same thing with all kinds of insects.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, I think we went into that a few weeks ago, discussing the decline in a number of species all through the reptiles, amphibians, insects.
Yeah, when you've been around a long time, Dan, like me and you, it's just normal to reminisce about the olden days, you know?
Yeah, I think
back when you always had 10 feet of snow every winter, you know, and got down to 20 below zero, and you couldn't walk from one to the end of your yard without stepping over a snake or two, and, you know, and box turtles, sometimes you had to get out and with a broom and sweep them by the road. You couldn't drive down the road. There's so many of them. And,
that might be an exaggeration.
Well, you know, but those were the good old days.
Okay, well, these are still good old days, though. And I was going to throw something in here. I don't know where else it would fit. I was out sitting in the woods a few days ago, enjoying a peaceful evening, looking up at the stars. We'll have an eye to the sky report later. And just heard this noise off in the woods. And it was, I didn't know what it was. It sounded like, to me, like an animal was being tortured to death. It was like screams and snarls and all kinds of weird noises.
Oh, there's snarls?
This kind of, well, maybe not, I don't know if snarls is the right word.
Okay.
But it was...
Because if you have snarls, that's indicative of a mammal.
Yeah, I thought it was a mammal at first. But I tried to, I looked on the internet for sounds of animals screaming and death calls of animals. This only lasted like 10 seconds. Mm-hmm. One time and then it was done.
You think it was a death call or something being grabbed by another animal?
Wouldn't that be quicker than 10 seconds? I mean, when an animal is caught, say a coyote was catching I don't know.
Well, you know, rabbits scream when they're grabbed.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Oh, they have a horrible scream.
That's true. I've heard that.
And even things like chipmunk, or Dan, I don't know if I remember, I think I might have told a story. This is not a nice story I'm going to tell, but it involves noises like this.
Okay.
You know, when animals prey on something like a predator, like say a bird of prey.
Right.
They're very efficient at it, but sometimes an animal doesn't just like die in the instant. Sometimes it takes a while, and sometimes an animal like a bird flies and grabs something, flies off of it while it's still alive and kicking and screaming.
That's when I've heard the rabbit scream. The clutches of a hawk.
Oh, it's just maybe sick. One day, here in the nature studio, a beautiful, I guess it was either a Cooper's, I think it was a Cooper's or a Sharp's, I can't remember it because it happened so fast, flew down. And I came around the corner of the building, and in flying the woods, I heard this awful screaming like that.
Uh-huh.
And in his clutches had this sweet little beautiful chipmunk.
A chipmunk?
Yeah, a chipmunk. And this chipmunk was screaming and yelling and making all these things. I mean, you could it was absolute and sheer terror.
Right.
And probably pain as well, as this bird flew off with this chipmunk.
Uh-huh.
And, a lot... Things like Cooper's Hawk or Sharpshin, they often eat other birds, but they're going to eat anything they can catch.
Uh-huh.
And, chipmunk's probably a pretty easy prey for something like swoop down and grab a bird out of midair. A chipmunk walking on the ground is probably easy prey. And I just felt so, so much empathy for that little chipmunk and for the fact that it was screaming. And I just, the terror it might have, and it's not going to think like we do as humans. They don't have that same kind of emotion. But they feel fright.
Yeah,
they know what's happening.
Yeah.
You know, that's instinctive, so it made it sound like you never think a chipmunk would make. So it might have been on almost anything, depending on whether it's something that's being attacked and grabbed and eaten and secured as prey, or something else is going. Maybe it's just a a misunderstanding with another animal of its kind.
Could have been just, I mean, it sounded to me like it was one animal doing this.
Yeah.
And would, if there were two animals in a tussle, in a fight, would one animal emit that kind of noise and the other one not? Or is it more like a predation?
Well, it depends on what's going on, but usually you'll hear both of them.
Yeah.
But, you know, raccoons make some horrible sounds when they're fighting with each other.
Right.
If you ever heard of them. Also, barred owls, I always say, if you can't identify a sound in the woods,
it might be a
barred owl, because they make just all kinds of screams and shrieks and other kind of sounds, depending on what they're doing, communicating, or if they're frightened of something. You
this
know,
was,
so
this was, you know, the
sometimes
only
you
one,
just never know.
It was just once, you know, in the whole evening. It wasn't repeated.
Yeah.
That's why I thought, I was thinking, okay, predation, but...
It's possible.
So it could have been something caught. Anyway.
There's all kind of little dramas happening out there that we're not privy to see, but we sometimes might hear. So no telling what it might have been.
Yeah. Anyway, I searched on the internet, death cries of animals and mating.
Did
cries
you go out
and
look
animals.
For blood stains, Dan?
I didn't go the next day.
Torn feathers, torn body
That's
parts.
That's what I should have done. I should have done
like that.
But anyway, I just wanted to throw that in there. That in addition to bird song and other calls that you hear in the woods.
Yeah. Well, while on the subject of death and destruction and annihilation possibility,
all right,
let's have a roadkill report.
Okay, the unique feature of Nature News, where we gather important information by observing the lifeless remains of those creatures which failed to make it across the road.
So I don't know if we've had a roadkill report in a while. You know, sometimes certain types of the year, we have roadkills constantly that we're mentioning roadkill reports, but sometimes we go a few weeks without a roadkill report. That doesn't mean things aren't continuing to be happening, getting killed, because they are. But
it is, I mean, in scientific journals, they use roadkill counts to, kind of tell the range expansion of animals or the population size. I got one item for this week, which was a black rat snake on the Blue Ridge Parkway.
Doggone it. And snakes are coming out. That's a good thing, but it's not when they get hit by cars. When they just came out,
that's right.
Hibernation.
The whole winter, they made it through, and then they come out.
Probably snake probably came out and shed its skin for the first time after brumating or hibernating for months. In this new skin, I'm going to go out and find something to eat. Oh, we're going to lay right here in this nice sunny spot. Sunny spot.
Right in the middle of the Blue Ridge Parkway, and about 30 inches long. Good size snake.
Yeah.
So that's all I've got.
All right, so that means snakes are out. It means it's warming up a good bit. And also, a friend of mine, this is a snake that he rescued out of the road, and is where he lives out in the Bent Creek area near Asheville. And he pulled a snake out that we normally see early in the year out of the road, and it didn't get hit, but a nice eastern garter snake.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so garter snakes are the snakes that normally have some stripes that run down their body, but they can be very variable. But they used to be a very common snake. They don't seem to be as common as they once were, but it used to be like the most common snake that you would see. Around here, one of the more common snakes you see are the black rat snakes, but you also commonly see them hit on the highway, particularly a little bit later in the year when snakes are more on the move. And so it's good to know that snakes are out.
Yeah.
I have not seen a snake yet, but I hate to see them turn up on roadkill report, because remember, snakes are out crawling around. They crawl out on the highway. It feels like a hot rock to them. They're going to bask in the sunshine.
Yep.
And even if people know that a snake is there, instead of going around it, they might even run over it on purpose because it is a snake.
Be,
but
yeah,
some
sad.
People just are totally oblivious to what's in the road, and they may hit something, not even know they hit a snake, that they didn't hit, that they hit a groundhog, that they hit a raccoon or possum or any number of things. Some people just don't care, and some people just are not paying very much attention. But Dan, you're like me. You probably have hit something by accident.
I have. I've had a car in front of me, is kind of blocking my view. Maybe following a little bit too close.
Yeah.
But and some animal suddenly is there.
Yeah. Makes you feel really bad, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, yeah. I think I had I was following someone, and a deer ran out. There were cars coming in both directions. Mm-hmm. The deer went right in between both. It came close to being hit in both directions, but made it through.
Yeah.
But, sometimes you just can't avoid it. Sometimes it just happens.
But I do know of all the animals I've hit with a car by accident, because of my heroic actions or skilled maneuvers, whatever you want to call it, I have saved hundreds of animal lives because I was aware that animals might be there, paying attention to an animal that suddenly showed up, getting slower, stuff like that. You know, so I'm really good at avoiding animals. But sometimes, no matter what you do, you can be the best driver, the most conservation-minded person, and you might hit an animal whether you like it or not. It just happens. But it sure makes you feel bad when it does.
Yeah, at nighttime, I have my peripheral vision. A lot of times, you know, I'm driving where there's no oncoming traffic. I have my brights on, and I'm kind of being aware of both edges of the road in case I see something, you know, moving out from the edge. And usually I don't see much. Seeing a few raccoons on the edge. So, but, you know, you can be aware that animals can emerge at any time. And also, you know, where they have the deer crossing signs, that's they're put up there because deer have been hit there in the past. And so, you know, they mean something if you see a deer crossing sign.
It shows the animal movement there. It's been documented in the past. Which mine brings up something related to roadkill report. I want to report on the tree of death.
Tree of death?
Tree of death.
Okay.
Now, first of all, Dan,
yeah.
If you go back and you look at the Bible, in Genesis, remember the Garden of Eden?
Yeah.
And there was a tree of life in the Garden of Eden that they were told not to eat of, or it would bring death to them eventually. But they did eat of it.
Well, what is the tree of death, though?
The tree of death is right down the road from the Nature News studio here.
It is?
It's a walnut tree.
Okay.
It grows right beside the road. And it hangs out over the road with the branches.
Okay.
And so walnuts are on branches, always drop down on the pavement where there's tree of death. Uh-huh. And if you're coming in one particular direction, you come around a little curve and start to go downhill. And then suddenly you're under the tree of death.
Yeah.
And by the time you get there, if there's a squirrel under there gathering walnuts out of the road where they drop down, there's just no way you're going to be able to avoid it.
Right.
So I call it the tree of death now because it's like a reliable spot to routinely, year-round almost, find dead squirrels because walnuts fall there, and even the ones that don't fall in the road might fall right on the edge of the road, and a lot of them are not gathered for a long time, and they become food for animals way past autumn, through winter, through early spring, sometimes even the early summer, and then they're starting to feed on other things, you know, but by just a 3 months later, when they start to produce fruits and stuff again, it becomes a tree of death again. So that this is a walnut, black walnut tree of death that hangs over the road.
Right.
That I think I'm going to start keeping track of how many squirrels in a year's time I find under the tree of death because I stop there a lot and pull the squirrels out of the road.
Yeah, well, you know, black walnuts are trees of rich alluvial sites, and so frequently they grow near rivers and bottomlands, which is where people have built highways. And so there are a lot of black walnuts in the area where people are driving, and hence a lot of walnuts falling on the road, and hence a lot of roadkill reports.
Yeah, and unfortunately a lot of walnuts grow right near the roadside edge.
All right.
But this is the most infamous tree of death on the whole road that I'm aware of. All right, that's our roadkill report today. Dan.
So, yes.
There's some other bugs that I want to mention.
Okay.
You know, there's little things that look like They're bees, but they look like bumblebees, but they're not bumblebees.
Oh, carpenter bees.
Carpenter bees. I've got a lot of carpenter bees around the Nature News studio here because we have wood siding on the building here. And they sort of like to burrow in to lay their eggs and pack stuff in there for their hatching young. Also, I've noticed them out nectaring on some things like ground ivy with the tiger swallowtail butterfly and stuff. So there's more bees out right now. And, of course, right now is the time we start to see the first things like the hornet, the queen hornet, start to build their nest. The queens that have overwintered in the wintertime and survived, they'll be coming out of hibernation if they are already out. They'll be looking for little places to start building a nest, laying their eggs, so they can hatch out workers that will then help them. Uh-huh. So these queen hornets and wasps and stuff are getting ready to start brand new nest in the season here. And then there's a lot of other insects out there kind of getting active here and there. And also, speaking of bees, sometimes I've noticed this, and there's some right here in Nature Studio, where it looks on the ground, it looks like it's a little ant nest or something. You see a little hole in the ground in kind of like clay soils or even browner soils, but it's right in the upper layer, and you see a little ring of excavated dirt around it, and you might think it's something like a doodle bug or an ant thing, but you'll see like two or three dozen of them all close by to each other.
Okay.
And I was investigating with one of them the other day, and it turns out there's some kind of a ground nesting bee coming out of those.
Oh,
so they're emerging, and you know, there's some nesting bee species that don't live in colonies, solitary bee species and stuff. And they're very important pollinating wildflowers and other things out there, tree blooms and stuff like that. But sometimes we don't realize there's all these other little bee species out there that are small. We sometimes just see the big ones and we think about the honeybees only, and then we get mad at the hornets and wasps that sting us, you know. But all these other little things, and a lot of them are not ones that are going to sting you, but they're very common around the area. And then if you go out and start looking at some of the early spring wildflowers, and particularly you see a lot of profuse wildflowers, things like ground ivy and other things, you'll start noticing all these tiny, tiny little small bees that are adult bees that have just emerged, you know, for spring here, and they've been living in this little chamber underground, and they're little bee species that don't have a big city like a beehive to live in, like honeybees do.
Right.
So, but they're very important pollinators, and one of those unseen little insect species that's out in early spring.
Yeah, there's another insect that's being seen a lot. We've had reports of this stink bug inside of people's houses.
I've seen a few of those.
And this is the brown marmorated stink bug.
I've had a few of those lately.
It's a non-native insect.
Yeah.
And it tends to overwinter inside of houses. It will crawl into any kind of, like, under the siding, if you had wood siding or little cracks or crevices around the windows.
Doesn't take much for the flattened bodies to come in.
Yeah, and then they come in, and this time of year they're becoming active.
I don't mind them.
You don't mind them?
No, I don't mind them.
Well, they're harmless.
Yeah, they're actually non-native.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of native stink bugs out there. But I don't get all upset when I see a stink bug in my house.
Yeah, I mean, I've had a few and just let them go outside.
Yeah.
But they are, you know, a little bit of a pest on certain crops, like apples, for example. They might chew on apples and discolor them a little bit. But they can, you know, really become, I don't know if you want to say home invaders, home inhabitors,
mm-hmm.
especially if you have a house that's kind of facing south where the sun would be shining on it, a little bit warm, especially if you had wood siding, little crevices that they could crawl in. They can really get a big population built up inside of someone's house. So we've had a few reports of them recently. They're becoming active. They're looking for a way to get out.
Yeah.
So I just let them out.
Yeah.
But it's the brown marmorated stink bug. It's kind of mottled light brown and dark brown.
And there's another insect that never comes in your house.
Okay.
That is native to our area, but some people will get upset about it. But it hasn't had a very good year last year or two, and I don't know how good it'll be this year. But as soon as we get to the end of March, to the first week of April or so, and it's a little bit warmer earlier this year, so I've seen some emerge. I'm seeing on the black cherry trees out there that are starting to have little leaves emerge on them. We're starting to see the very first signs of tent caterpillar nest in them. And, of course, most people have heard of tent caterpillars. They build these in the crotches of trees. They emerge from little eggs that were laid in the fall by the tent caterpillar, caterpillar moth, adult. And then they hatch out in some of these early days of spring when it starts to warm. They crawl to the crotch of a tree. You know, it's where a branch comes into another, next to another branch, or where a branch goes into the trunk of the tree. So a little junction there. And then they start spinning a little web there, like a little tent, and that's where they live. But when they're not in there during the daytime, they go out to the tips of the branches and start eating the emerging little leaves on black cherry trees and other things that are related to that, but mostly black cherry in our area. And then at night, they go back and get in their little tent again. And if it's a really cold day, they stay in their tent, and it becomes like a little greenhouse, and it gets real warm inside there with translucent fibers, just letting some heat. And then when they're in there, they're kind of protected from birds and stuff that would peck and eat them. And also, tent caterpillars are a little bit fuzzy, so there are some birds that might not like to eat them. But they're going to go back for it. I find them very interesting.
Oh, they are. They're interesting animals.
But they get sometimes too numerous.
Yeah,
for some people.
Well, people don't like them because they're unsightly. But they when they come out, they leave a little silk trail behind them. And then they can follow that silk trail to get back into their nest. And I've seen...
Now, their nest is unsightly.
It is, yeah. It's unsightly.
But the caterpillar itself...
Oh, no, the caterpillars are beautiful.
If you look at them, they look like the patterns of an oriental rug or something like that. They've got all these... Something like a little blue in there mixed in with browns and reds and maroons and stuff. So up close, they are absolutely... Very, very intricate patterns.
Yeah. And so anyway, they have these little silk trails that they follow back and forth to go to the end of the branch, back to their nest. And I've seen years ago, probably in the last millennium, Cincinnati Nature Center, you can take those little silk trails and you can, you know, bend them into a circle, and the caterpillars will just go around and around and around.
What a mean thing to do.
Following this silk, so it's just an instinct. But I guess you could try that yourself, but I think after they go around a few times, I would let them go back to their nest. So a lot of insects starting to show up here on Nature News.
Yeah, yeah. And just like insects are a sure sign of spring and butterflies are a sure sign of spring, so are wildflowers.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, before we get to wildflowers, I think we should give our contact information.
No, we've gone over halfway in a program. We have not paused to give our contact information.
And people, you know, might be wanting to contact us. I think we asked for people to contact us if they, it's one thing to see if any hummingbirds were seen yet.
Oh, yeah. I've heard reports. I was out doing a program earlier this week.
I bought poop.
Then some people said that we're getting some reports from the Charlotte area, and I think you mentioned that last week.
We had two from Charlotte.
And then somebody else mentioned that they had a report from somewhere about 40 miles away from the Brevard area where somebody was starting to see some hummingbirds.
Okay.
And I don't know which direction it is, whether it's down the mountain and upstate South Carolina or another direction.
Yeah.
But hummingbirds are on the way, and typically we see the first hummingbird arrive in some of our mountain neighborhoods, first week of April, sometimes like April the 1st, March 31st.
Getting close.
So that reminds me, I need to get out and make sure that, since a lot of things are happening a little earlier this year, I think I better get out and make sure a couple of my hummingbird feeders are filled with sugar water and ready to go.
Right. And so we asked that last week, and we also asked if anyone had seen a living or dead armadillo in Madison County.
It's funny, Dan.
Did someone report one?
I was at this program earlier that where somebody mentioned what I just mentioned.
Yeah.
By Humber, and somebody, and this, I was producing a program, and this program was for a group of nature enthusiasts.
Right.
And they always have a little check-in. People tell their nature stories and stuff, what they've seen.
Right.
And one of them said they'd seen an armadillo.
In Madison County?
It was down in Transylvania County, I guess.
Transylvania.
And, I wanted to talk to her after the program and see exactly the location, but I didn't get a chance. She left too soon.
Right.
But she meant she had seen an armadillo just recently.
And so
here.
You know, the armadillos are expanding their range. First one in western North Carolina was 2007. We've now seen them in Transylvania County, in Henderson County, Buncombe County. We're right at the edge, but we haven't had a report yet from Madison County. So once again, if you see a armadillo or even a roadkill armadillo in Madison County or anywhere, just get us that information. You can email us at naturenewswnc@gmail.com. That's Nature News with the letters WNC, standing for Western North Carolina. naturenewswnc@gmail.com. Let us know where you saw your armadillo.
Right, and she saw a live one. It wasn't a roadkill.
A live one. Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So far, I've documented a whole lot of roadkills with my camera and all. And locations, but I've yet to see a live armadillo running around in western North Carolina. I hope to see them because I like armadillos.
Yes.
Well, I take it back. I've seen one, a captive one, that had to come in for rehabilitation, but not one that was out in the wild running around. Oh, there goes an armadillo running across the road.
Yeah.
And they're mostly nocturnal.
Yeah.
So you got to be at the right place at the right time to see them, probably. But yeah.
Okay.
So how else do you get in touch?
Email. You can phone us. You have your phone with you. A lot of people have their phone with them all the time.
Now, don't call collect.
No, do they still have collect?
I'm
going to
say, some people say, what do you mean call collect?
Yeah.
Once again, us old geezers here, there was a time when you had to make a long-distance phone call. You had to call collect if you didn't want to be charged your phone, or you had to go through an operator or something, you know, to make them. Now everybody's on their phone plan. You're just it's automatic in there that you make long-distance phone calls.
Yeah.
But it didn't used to be that way. It used to be a big deal to make a long-distance call. It would be very expensive.
There's no long distance. There's just distance. There's no long distance.
Yeah. Dan, back when they used to charge for long-distance calls, I won't give too many personal details, but this was back in the 80s. And a certain female friend of mine who was out of town for a number of months, and we talked on the phone a lot.
Okay.
And I ran up a long-distance phone call bill in 1 month of over $200.
That's a lot back then.
Yes, that's back in the early 80s.
Yeah, that would be like... You know,
but now you don't hear that. You might have a cell phone bill that costs that much, but you're getting as many long-distance calls as you want to and stuff like that.
Internet,
yeah, but anyway, a little nostalgia that I thought I'd throw that in.
So
what we old people do.
You can call us from anywhere. At 828-891-5169. We have just the answering machine. You could leave your information on there. If you'd like us to mention your name, if you're giving us a good report, you can leave your name and we'll mention it on next week's Nature News. You can also send us a letter in the mail on paper with the stamp at Nature News, 3150 North Mills River Road, Mills River, North Carolina, 28759. And one more thing to remind you, if you'd like to listen to Nature News but you don't want to get up at 7 a.m. on Saturday, you can go to the WTZQ website and you can find Nature News on there anytime you want to. For the next week or two, it stays on there for like a month, and you can also listen to the past three or four or five programs by going to WTZQ.com and scroll down to the programs page, and you'll find Nature News right there.
Right.
Okay, so now we can move on to whatever you were talking about.
Yeah, do you remember what
it was? Was it flowers?
Yes, wildflowers.
All right.
Because we can't talk about spring insects, spring butterflies, all these other spring things without mentioning spring wildflowers.
Yes. Okay. Well, I think the big news would be the report of white-flowered trilliums, large flowered white trilliums.
Yes, I saw a bunch of them the other day. And where I saw them is down at a little bit at lower elevation, still in the mountains here, but it was down around the Pearson's Falls area of Saluda.
Okay.
So Saluda is one of our lower elevations, right outside of Hendersonville. You go down the mountain a little bit, and I don't know the exact elevation of Saluda area down there, but it's a few hundred feet less
than
say Hendersonville, which is about 2,200 feet.
Right.
So you go down there, and at a slightly lower elevation, but not all the way down to the Piedmont, there's a lot of wildflowers down there right now. And I saw lots and lots of white flowering trillium out the other day, and they were just pretty profuse across the area. But also that is an area that had a lot of flooding from Hurricane Helene and from one of the river it goes through there, Packlet River. And I imagine that some of those wildflower places were scoured, and a lot of wildflowers might have been impacted by that. In fact, the Pearson's Falls Glen down there, they call it, a place where people go to see wildflowers, run by the Tryon Women's Garden Club down there. It's closed right now, and it won't be open until about another year from now because they're repairing all the damage from Hurricane Helene, fallen trees, water washing out, coming down to a waterfall and the wildflower preserve there.
Yeah.
So a lot of damage down there, but nature will repair itself. It will just take some time, but at least right now I did see a good number of white flowering trilliums in bloom. Plus there are a lot of what Dan likes to call toad trilliums.
Right.
I call them sessile trilliums, but the ones with the mottled colored leaves, Right. But they're also out at this elevation here, like here at Nature Studio. We have some of those trilliums out here.
Well, speaking of the effects of the flooding or the rainfall from Hurricane Helene, some areas along rivers and streams were just completely washed out. But a lot of areas on a slope, just the sheet erosion or the flooding, the water, so much water moving down, carrying away soil. I've seen areas where the rhizomes of things like black cohosh are completely uncovered. All the soil is washed away.
Right, but
the underground stems are just exposed completely to sunlight.
So they didn't get washed away, they just had all the soil washed off them.
Yeah, yeah. And so these rhizomes,
that means they're helping to hold the soil together.
That's
too
true. But the rhizomes then are exposed, they're full of starch. Any animal can come along and eat them.
Yeah.
And also the sunlight probably can bake those things too.
Yeah.
So some areas that are kind of far away from water also were affected by the heavy rainfall of Helene.
Dan, these areas that had a lot of rainfall and maybe some of the banks got scoured where there were lots of wildflower stuff and maybe washed them down, they went somewhere.
Yeah.
So do you think they would survive in there at that time of year when already it's almost time for them to go dormant?
Uh-huh.
Do you think they got washed up on somewhere downstream dozens of miles away and then it'll sprout down there?
That's possible.
Or do you think that they just got buried in the silt and stuff underneath down deep in the river and they're lost?
I would say a very small percentage, though. If they got washed up, to the far enough off to the side.
Yeah.
And, some plants, some trees, that's the way they spread, like the black willow.
Mm-hmm.
Frequently, during a flood, they're usually right on the edge of a stream, and their twigs are very flexible, bendable, and fragile, and they'll just break off, be carried downstream. And these twigs, if they land in a sandbar along the river, they'll sprout roots and they'll grow, and a whole new black willow will grow. So some plants obviously are benefiting from this flooding, black willow being one of them. But getting back to wildflowers, I also went down into the, Old Fort area, which is kind of down in the upper Piedmont or right on the Blue Ridge, and went on a little trail there called the Catawba Falls Trail. and that's a beautiful trail down there. When you get to this falls, I don't know if you've been there recently.
Yeah, I've been there recently. I know they've done made all these stairs and stuff to go to the falls. They repaired some trails. But I did hear something on the news that isn't part of it closed off for some repairs right now, that maybe the whole loop trail is not open?
Oh, yeah, part of the loop trail. But you can get to the falls, and I think it's 550 steps.
Oh, I can't imagine going up. Hey, at my age, I have trouble going up 5 or 6 steps.
I paused at the base. Oh. But I mean, the stairs, it's a safety issue. You know, people were climbing up there and falling and getting hurt.
Yeah, I mean, before the stairs.
Before the stairs.
Yeah, but now they start climbing there and they have heart attacks halfway up. So they have little landings
there.
They
need an escalator.
Don't they have a little landing between some of the stairs?
Oh, yeah, they do.
That way you can sit and rest or call 911 or say, that's as far as I can go.
Right. You go ahead and I'll wait here.
Yeah.
But it's right along the falls. You get a lot of interesting views, and, you know, a lot of the rocks are covered with mosses and ferns and so forth. You're right up close. But anyway, just up to the stairs, I had 21 species of wildflowers in bloom. I'll mention some of them.
Did you go all the way up to the top of the stairs?
No, I went to the bottom of the stairs.
What do you mean you went to the bottom? You went to the bottom and stopped.
Yeah.
So you took the trail to the bottom of the stairs and stopped and did not go
up the stairs?
I did not climb
the stairs, no.
Because you'd already found 26 species of wildflowers.
21.
Okay, and you figured you probably wouldn't find that many more if you went up the stairs.
Well, that's not the reason.
Or you were
I was just
conserving your energy.
Yeah, I was saving my energy for future activities. But what we saw were these. We saw a lot of common blue violets. And, you know,
they're out here too.
That's such a beautiful plant.
Yeah, they're out here.
We shouldn't call it common. We should call it the magnificent blue violet.
Yeah.
Or the fabulous blue violet. Yeah. But anyway, common blue violet, star chickweed.
I'm glad we don't have to call it the uncommon blue violet.
That's a good point.
That would indicate that there's not very many of them around.
Yeah, that's true. Star chickweed, we saw some sharp-lobed hepatica still in bloom.
Mm-hmm.
They were in bloom there a few weeks ago, and they're still in bloom. Bloodroot was still up, just finishing up its blooming season.
No, I haven't seen any bloodroot yet. I want to see bloodroot.
And one that was abundant was yellowroot, which is a small shrub. Grows along streams.
Yeah.
The flowers are
very
inconspicuous.
But it doesn't really look like a shrub. It's considered to be a shrub, but it really doesn't look like a shrub. It is woody, but you wouldn't know unless you studied that it was actually a shrub.
Yeah, it's like a knee-high shrub.
Yeah.
It's really small. But these tiny little purple flowers that you almost don't notice, but I mean, it's called yellow root because if you ever saw the roots exposed, they are
bright
yellow.
Yeah.
They're used for dyeing. Red maple was still in flower down there. Halberd-leaved yellow violet.
Still in flower? Red maple?
Red maple, yeah.
Dang. And, up here in the mountains, even around here, Brevard and Hendersonville, Asheville, even here, a lot of them are in seed now.
Yeah, yeah.
But you saw some still in bloom?
Yeah, we had a lot that were already in seed, but some that were still...
Huh.
Well, let's say they had a few flowers on them.
Yeah.
They weren't in full bloom.
Yeah.
They had some flowers.
That seemed a little late.
Yeah, it is a little late. Halberd-leaved yellow violet was out. Canada violet. There were a few Canada violets, which, you know, a little bit unexpected there. Round-leaf violet, foam flower was still in bloom. This has a kind of maple-shaped leaf and a spike about 8 inches tall with tiny little white flowers. Look, always reminds me of the fireworks they shoot off with the white streams of light coming out from them.
Right.
Hairy woodrush. It kind of looks like a grass, but it's actually woodrush. Oh, spicebush was in flower.
Mm-hmm.
Is that still in flower here?
It is. Okay. It is right here on the yard at the Nature News Studio.
That is a shrub that looks like a shrub and has tiny little yellow flowers.
And it is a shrub. It doesn't just look like a shrub. It is a shrub.
It is a shrub.
But it's a big shrub.
There was an invasive periwinkle, which a lot of people plant.
That's also in bloom here. We have a little patch here at the Nature News Studio.
Uh-huh.
We keep under control.
Right. There were some robin's plantain, which is like a fleabane. Looks like a daisy with very, very many narrow white petals. It is in bloom down there. And golden Alexanders, a little member of the carrot family with tiny little yellow flowers. Carolina vetch, one of our wild peas, was in bloom. Solitary pussy toes, little clumps of very compact white flowers on a little plant. The mock strawberry, which looks kind of like a strawberry leaf, but has a yellow flower. Dwarf cinquefoil. And hairy bittercress, one of the common little lawn, tiny little white mustard plants. So that's 21 species. That's the complete list.
Well,
between the parking lot and the base of the stairs at Catawba Falls.
Yeah. So by next week, we'll probably be able to double that, depending on where you're at.
Yeah.
And once we get into April, you know, if the weather stays in good shape here, we're going to start seeing more wildflowers pop up. Even around here, like their May apples are up. We don't have blooms yet.
Uh-huh.
The May apples up. Some of the trilliums, like the Cecil trillium, is up. Lots of golden ragwort in bloom right now. Also, Dan, when I was down around Pearson Falls area the other day, I actually saw some dogwood trees that had started to open their bloom. They're not out and totally spread out and mature, but they're open.
Right.
And within a few days, warm weather, they will be in full bloom.
Yeah.
But I guess those were some of the more early ones.
Yeah.
You know, but I was surprised that there were some dogwoods out.
They have the four white structures, which everyone calls petals, which are technically bracts.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the center of that are, I don't know, 50 or 60 tiny little greenish flowers, which are actually the true flowers. Dogwood, a beautiful, beautiful plant.
Right, yeah, yeah.
So I'm glad to hear that.
So this is wildflower season, and just remember, the lower an elevation you'll be at, the more wildflowers you're going to see early on. And then as we go throughout the season, it spreads up the mountainside. But you can go up to the high elevations even in late April and see, early spring wildflowers. That would be early spring down here because it's early spring up there much, much later in the month. And so when we go into April, lots of wildflowers going in the early part of May, even more wildflowers, but by the first part, week or so of May, then the trees are going to be leafing out overhead at the lower, mid to low elevations, and the wildflower display in the woods is going to kind of disappear, and we're going to turn to those wooded edges, and roadside wildflowers that we see so much in mid to late May and early June, but we're going to have wildflowers from now till frost.
That's right.
Of some
and
type.
How about a quick little eye to the sky? Because
okay.
We still have to do what's in my pocket.
Well, I might have to save that for next week,
oh,
Dan.
Oh, really?
Because okay. We only have a few minutes left, so... What's in my pocket can wait.
Okay.
It's not something that needs oxygen. I might put it somewhere else because if I leave my pocket, I'll probably tear it up.
Okay.
But so I might.
It's something fragile.
It is something a little fragile, but I'll save it for next week. So
yeah. Don't keep it in your pocket all week.
But eye in the sky has to be now because if we wait till next week. Eye in the sky. What would be an eye in the sky for next week? Might not be what's in the sky right now.
Well, that'll still be very similar.
Oh, yeah? Well,
yeah.
Let's hear what you got.
Just in general, I've been out looking at sunsets. The trees still don't have their leaves, so it's still a good time to watch sunsets. You got the whole sky to look at. And it's just interesting because this past week you could see the five brightest objects in the sky in one evening. And so you watch the sun go down, which is obviously the brightest object.
Okay.
And the moon is up pretty high, almost overhead.
Is that number two?
That's number two brightest object. And then just as after the sun goes down in the twilight, you can see the third brightest object, which is the planet Venus.
In the twilight glow, that's a Willie Nelson song.
That's a Willie Nelson song.
Yeah. I mean,
it's about twilight.
You said that, I just had to.
Sorry.
I mean, that's the first one I heard, twilight glow. Hey, okay. That's what came to mind.
All right, so in the fading light just after sunset, if you look to the west, low in the sky, you can see the planet Venus, which is the third brightest object.
Venus is always bright.
Yeah. And so, of course, Venus is closer to the sun.
Venus is never dull.
No, it's never dull.
Of course, the sun's never always bright, and the moon's always bright, too.
Yeah.
But Venus is so routinely very bright that it's... almost anybody can find Venus from the south.
And it's always, it's either the evening star or the morning star. We're looking toward...
You can look at Venus, but you can't look at the sun. It might burn your eyeballs out.
Without special glasses. That's
you look at the moon, too. Look at Venus, which is a star, but don't look at the sun. The sun, which is a star, is too close.
Yeah, you don't want to look at the sun. But I remember, occasionally you can see, at this time of year, maybe, after the sun goes down, if it's a clear night and the moon is not up, you can see actually shadows cast by Venus. It's bright enough that it will, if you're in an extremely dark place,
oh, really?
Turn your back to Venus and you can see a shadow.
Hmm.
So Venus is the third brightest object in the sky. It's closer to the sun, so it's always near the sun. So it's either, Venus right now is on the other side of the sun from us. But as we look, past the setting sun, we see Venus up there, third brightest object. And then if you look almost overhead, Jupiter, another planet, a very big planet, the next brightest object in the sky, is almost straight up. And then the next one would be a star called Sirius. And Sirius would be kind of pretty high up in the southeast in the sky just after sunset. And it's the next brightest object and the brightest star we can see. The others are all planets or moons or suns. And to find, if you're not sure, Sirius, Jupiter will be higher up in the sky, Sirius will be lower down, but also you see the constellation of Orion almost straight south. And Orion, the hunter, has the famous belt of three bright stars close together, and then it's got two stars for the arms, two for the legs. The one for, I guess, the left arm is Betelgeuse, and it's kind of reddish. That comes out pretty soon. But if you use the three stars in the belt of Orion as pointers, they point kind of towards Sirius, so you could always find Sirius if you could find Orion. So, there you go. Out at sunset, you see the brightest object, the sun, goes down, then you see the moon up above, second brightest, then Venus. Look up, you see Jupiter, and then a little bit further down, you see Sirius, the next brightest object, all in one beautiful evening. So that's our eye to the sky for tonight.
So you're saying we could do that next week too? Same five bright objects will still be with us.
They'll still mostly be with us. Yeah, yeah. The moon is getting lower and lower, but
right.
It should be over the next few days at least.
Yeah.
You'll still see those. Venus will be up there for a while.
Yeah, okay. Well, very good. So that's right at sky. We've been always tell you a little bit about what's happening in the nighttime sky above us. Sometimes it's eclipses, sometimes it's meteor showers, sometimes it's constellations, stargazing, planet viewing, all those kinds of things. So that's what you see, the five brightest objects.
All right.
And with that said, Dan, we're about out of time here at Nature News.
Okay.
What we need to do is we'll give our contact information one more time.
Okay.
We'll leave the air, and we'll save what's in my pocket for next week.
Okay.
I'll give you a little hint, though. Dan already mentioned it's very fragile.
Okay. Can it harm me if I hold my hand out and close my eyes?
No, it will not harm you.
Okay, good.
Yeah. But if I told you what it was, it might frighten you.
Uh-oh.
Just because the words I use to describe it.
Okay, we'll save
but
that
it's totally
for next
harmless.
Week. We'll save that for next week.
Okay, we'll save that
Meanwhile,
for next
if
week.
You'd like to get in touch with us, our email address is naturenewswnc@gmail.com. Our telephone number is 828-891-5169. Our mailing address is Nature News 3150 North Mills River Road, Mills River, North Carolina 28759. So if you want to send us a hummingbird report or especially an armadillo sighting, that's where you can send it.
Or anything.
Or if you have a what's in my pocket you want to send.
That's right. We have somebody in one of our listeners did a what's in her pocket.
Yeah.
Over email or
right.
Or however we did, I forget.
So one more time, the email address, naturenewswnc@gmail.com. Meanwhile, get out and enjoy the early days of spring. Get out and enjoy the last wide open sky before the leaves come on the trees. Until next week, this is Dan Lazar.
And I'm Carlton Burke.
Stay tuned to the same station. We'll be back again next Saturday morning at the same time with another edition of
Nature News.